Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Pandemic with Tres. This is our official second episode. Today I have a guest with me, one of my great friends, Daniel. I met him in college this semester and we're both studying psychology. And we've had great conversations despite the pandemic going on. Daniel, take it.
Yeah, greetings ladies, gents, and all the audience. This is Daniel speaking. And as Rez has just stated to y'all, indeed, when he and I have a dialogue, it's most always delightful, despite the fact that we are quite the distance apart from quarantine. Having it been 7 to 8 weeks up to this point, it's a very pleasurable experience to be here and to come together to discuss what we wish to discuss today.
Yeah, it's a rather unique time, I would like to call it. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just reading the other day that because if I remember correctly, you're transferring from community college this semester too, right? Or no?
That's I plan to transfer probably after this fall.
Okay.
I'll have at least one AAT under my belt, but I'll be working to complete another one since I'm already on my way too.
So okay.
I think perhaps if I apply to a uni with a degree while working to get another one, if I fail the first time, I'll have two for the next time. That's my hypothesis, I guess you could say.
Okay, then I don't think this has an effect on you, but I was reading today that all California State universities have planned to have online classes all through fall too. I don't know if our community college is doing that, but I know California State universities are having their fall semester be online too. And that's, for me, going into that this first semester, I'm like, no, that's not how I want it to be. But it is what it is.
I'll tell you one thing, Rez. I actually registered for a summer class for, at our community college. And when I was browsing the course catalog, the majority of them listed when I was looking on that day, they were like online only. And some of them that weren't like listed as online initially, if you investigated further, they had like a notice stating the fact that even though it says we're going to meet in person, it is actually online. So summer is completely online.
Yeah, that's, I don't know what's going to happen. It's really interesting because I received an email from the board of director at our college saying that the graduation is going to be online, but we're going to have one in person one in December. And I'm like, from what it seems like, we're still going to be stuck at home by December. So, but hopefully not. But it's just interesting.
I will feel, sorry for those who may unfortunately have to graduate in an online format and not be, in a collective locale in person for that. Because graduation is such a special experience to remember if you truthfully put in the work and time to fully engage in your academic experience, whether you had to take shortcuts or whether you had to, just tough it out. No matter which road you took to get to that destination of getting that degree, there is something to be had in a graduation that, most people have come to idealize.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally understand. I graduated. I went to my graduation from high school, but my two cousins who are graduating both from universities this semester, they did not go to their high school graduation because they said they'll go to their college graduation, but then they didn't go to their college graduation saying they'll go to their university graduation, and now they can't go to their university graduation.
It's like, uh-oh, we got this pandemic, and now it looks like there's time. Yeah, that's just very unfortunate circumstantial.
Yeah, so It's very unique. I was talking to one of them this morning, and she was saying how she felt a little lucky because they apparently took a picture of them with their cap and gown long before all this happened, and so for the online graduation, they're asking us to submit a photo, and so she just used that one. So she kind of has a graduation, but not really.
Yeah. On my end, I've seen a few of my former high school peers who are, you know, in terms of grade, they're like a few grades above me or more, like give or take one or two. And I've seen at least two of them have post some kind of graduation post for having completed their uni years. And one of them in particular, they posted two. One of them was, you know, they had their degree and they had like a drink in their hand, and then in another one they had their cap on and they were in a bathing suit, you know, kind of just taking in the whole, oh, I'm graduating, but I can take advantage of the environment I'm in because, you know, we're in a pandemic. What else can I do? I might as well live it up. And it was a very endearing thing to see because they essentially took what seemed like a ruined event, but they turned it into something that they could, you know, just feel some sort of joy in a very unique way, given the circumstances that we're in at this time.
Right. I think it's interesting you mentioned that because today my mom showed me a post with it was one of our family members having just, they described their children is one of their child is graduating from high school this semester. And so they had posted some of his picture and they have described what type of person he is, like what his study, the hobbies he has. And then they had this really, for me, it was an interesting hashtag because I really don't know what it means. And I was interested to find out what it means. It was hashtag unadopted. So it made me question, okay, are you putting your child up for adoption or are you celebrating their graduation? Are you like, is this a celebration for them?
Peculiar hashtag to throw into a post such as that.
Yeah, and then I clicked on it because I don't have social media. The only social media I have is the Instagram account for the podcast. But my mom was showing this on Facebook, and then I clicked on the hashtag to see if like she was the only, if that person was the only one having this hashtag, and I realized that no, it seems to be, apparently it's a normal thing on Facebook now.
Yeah, I'll say that I don't have Facebook, so I wouldn't I wouldn't have knowledge of that instance, but you know, seeing hashtags here and there that are seemingly just patched on, like a kind of like if you have like a quilt with holes in it, you just throw a patch on that to try to, you know, make the whole thing complete. I can kind of see the motion of putting them in, but in terms of having some sort of sense in it, maybe it's not as true as it seems in terms of just being coherent with the rest of the post.
Right. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like not to scream out loud these kind of stuff, but like to completely post everything that happens in your life on social media, I feel like it takes away the specialness of that event taking place. For example, I was just reading today that Krispy Kreme is giving out donuts to 2020 graduates. And all you need to do is wear your cap and gown and I think go to one of their local shops, and this is happening on May 19th. So like me personally, I would much rather do that than have a post like that, but it's just different people. Let me ask you a question. What do you think about this whole thing? Like the quarantine, the pandemic, the protests that's going on, everything.
The quarantine inevitably is going to show ugly parts of our collective humanity. I know that for certain, whether you overhear it in the news that you see on the television or you see it in the social media posts that people choose to put up. And within those posts, you'll see people committing certain actions that might seem counterintuitive to putting the quarantine to rest. But with that too is we're forced into a position in which we have to utilize with what we got and what resources are at our disposal immediately into, you know, get by, essentially. I mean, some people are going to get by easier than others just because of the way that our society has built itself to be. But even with that, quarantine to some people, it is very, very significant. I find it significant enough. And there are some who completely dismiss the whole thing. And I think that center of collision is going to be very, very hot of a topic for the entire duration of this time period that we're in.
Yeah, that's interesting. We had the talk last episode too with our guest that in that episode. And as I said last episode, like for protests, I would understand it. As you said, some people have right now, even with the pandemic, they have access to whatever they need, but some people are simply not able to afford the most important stuff, such as food and other, yeah, survival needs during this time. So I would understand if they were the ones protesting, but it seems that they're not the ones who are protesting, and it's, in fact, they're just quietly continuing work and going on while the other group, they're the ones protesting. And it was really interesting to read this stuff, that because I was reading today that it's not only in the US the protest going on, it's not only in US. It was the one I read was even in Brazil. They're doing protests against staying at home orders, and they had put up this show of some of them acting dead, supposedly dead from COVID-19, and then they would just get up and do dances and I guess you could call them rituals, which was really funny. And for me, it was funny because I was like, how, I don't know, how close-minded should you say, or how small-minded you are to think that you're okay, all these people that have died, it's just a lie, nobody has died. So it was just really interesting to read that's happening all over place. Yeah. But again, it's just, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. How do you think the world would be after quarantine?
I think there will be a modest population of people who will have their minds unchanged by the whole thing, despite the pardon my language, but just despite the massive death toll that we've amassed so far, globally speaking, and despite all of the chaos that has ensued in supermarkets and in different regions, and despite people disobeying or just not choosing to listen to the boundaries that we've tried to set for ourselves, those people that are ha exercising that behavior now, I think with a substantial amount of confidence are going to remain in their ways throughout until it's over, because people are just so ingrained into sticking to one way of thinking until they really take the time to learn how to tackle a problem differently. But for those of us who've had the mind to be accommodating toward quarantine as a whole, set of ways of living, I think we're going to be hopefully more mindful of the resources that we have at our disposal and more mindful of the time that we have to spend, whether it be in this life or whatever you choose to believe in terms of, afterlife or when life is non-existent any longer.
That's an interesting way of mentioning it. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that. So do you think will people stay inside more, or do you think we're going to have the same normal as before?
I think some people will be, I okay, my hopeful idealized answer to that question is that people will have at least one or a couple, you know, sets of precautions to take before heading out in public more, despite the fact that we've had multiple decades of having a lot of, well, freedom in going out and conducting ourselves publicly. But I think in reality, there will be people, as I've already said, they will be unmoved by everything that's happened around them, even though they've had it in their face or they've heard it, they've overheard it. Some will not change. That is, I think, certain. But there will be some who will, again, be more mindful of, you know, going out or being more prepared for having maybe a certain amount of resources or being or making certain that they have enough supplies at home to last them for a certain amount of time in the event something else of this nature, of this magnitude, if you will, would arise again.
That's interesting.
No, go ahead. I think an example of this, like, certainly is within the recent influx of mostly young adults and young people traveling to, you know, our state's poppy fields. Because years ago, there was a trend where, at least from the people I followed, you know, my high school peers and such, they would travel to the California poppy fields and they would take pictures in them and they would stand in them. And, you know, despite the aesthetic value and the natural beauty within the flower itself, I've heard it said, that, you know, damaging the flower or picking it is actually illegal. And, you know, when we have people just trampling the flowers, our poppies, it's very, you know, just, it's not intuitive to not follow the stipulation set out by our, you know, authority figures. And with it now, the fact that we're doing the exact same thing we were told not to do years ago during a more important time of, you know, staying at home, it's very silly. It's a silly scene in all reality, but it could have serious consequences if all the undesirable variables line up and mix together, you know?
Right. That's an interesting thing that I kind of connected to having freedom, which I want to talk to you about. But before we get into that, I wanted to mention two things. One being, you said we kind of ignored this in a way, and in future, after it's over, some people will ignore it, some people will not ignore it. One thing is that back in 2015, Bill Gates had a TED Talk, and I hadn't seen it until recently, that in that TED Talk, he mentioned that during the next few decades, the danger that we should be scared of is not necessarily a World War III or any type of war among those lines, but it's going to be a fight with a virus that's unknown, and we don't have anything to prepare ourselves against it. And
most
so,
certainly. Yes.
Right. And so this was 5 years ago. And it's really interesting because, as I mentioned again in last episode, every 100 years or so, we've had something like this happening. So it's really interesting to see why couldn't we prevent this? Was it because we were spending, and by we, I mean both people of a country and the government, they were spending so much time on military or on other stuff that they ignored this? Or what makes that, maybe an easier way to say it is by kind of making a segue to the second question, that what is the difference between those who will ignore it and those who will not ignore it? Because, for example, what is the difference between us, US, and a country like Austria or Finland or Germany? Because they were doing research on which governments have been most successful in dealing with this pandemic. And those the countries I just named, they were the top ones. And so it's interesting to see, okay, what is the difference? What are they doing that we're not doing? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think when it comes to like what, okay, I haven't like fully followed like the world news in terms of how other countries are dealing with the pandemic, mm-hmm. I will admit, but being in my home and having to overhear the news on the television sets and, you know, from talking to my friends and going into my philosophy class for that matter, talking about the pandemic because it's an ongoing source of discussion.
Right.
At least in this country, the United States, we value freedom so highly. We practically breathe the concept. We inhale it and we exhale it. But when we inhale it, we inhale much more than we expel. And that is proven by how we, the people, choose to conduct ourselves and choose to appropriate our dangers based on how much freedom we will have once we confront them, I believe, versus, let's say, another nation where even though they have freedoms, they are at a certain distance relative to their own survival and suspension that they are willing to have it in a place in which it is not either threatened nor amplified by accommodations needed to be made in the event of a disastrous situation, that being this pandemic that we're in.
Right, that's a very interesting topic, freedom, because I personally think no country, at least with the society and generation we have right now, no country can achieve absolute freedom, because whatever you do, there's gonna be an opposite side, and that opposite side is gonna raise up and fight against the other side. For example, a big example of this would be gun laws that are kind of a hot topic. And I think they've always been in the United States. They have been a hot topic to talk about. And so,
very much, yes.
You have two sides. One side that they say, no, we want guns. The other side that goes, no, you can't have guns. And in my opinion, okay, who's to say which side is right, which side is wrong? Because the side that says we want guns says we use them for personal safety. And then that the other side says, but okay, well, look at it. We have more negative effects than positive effects. But then in the middle of this, there's the talk of freedom. If you say no to either side, you're taking their freedom away. And they're both going to come back at you by using that same thing that, you're saying no to me, you're taking my right away. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
And it's kind of the same thing that I'm seeing right now in the protests going on, because when you search on Google COVID-19 protests, if you go to image, most of the images you see, the signs that people have are talking about constitutional rights. And it was interesting. One of them, I can't see it right now, but I remember one of them was talking about liberty and freedom and COVID-19. They had somehow related all these three subjects together. And most of them said, live free or die, which is funny for me because the whole idea of staying home was not to die, even though you might die anyways. Like, there is a chance you might get it either way. That's because of right now we don't have anything that says if you do this, you're not gonna get it for 100%. Even if you stay at home, your chances are really, really low, but they're not zero.
Yeah, there's the probability still going to exist no matter how many precautions you take, because an absolute like value in that regard, being like the blackest or the whitest, is essentially unattainable.
Right. It's really interesting to to see all these people talk about them and talk about their freedoms being taken away and all those kind of stuff. Because for me, is like, I can't understand what they mean by their freedom being taken away. Like, again, I think, as you mentioned, in America, you breathe, you inhale and exhale freedom. And to a certain degree, I feel like that's a great opportunity, because you don't see that almost anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, but
It comes with its own problems.
Yeah, and because we're just breathing in and exhaling freedom so often, we're very biased to it. Mm-hmm. You know, like let's say a biologist will tell you that for humans and for most, you know, living organisms, oxygen is an essential element, you know, to living. You know, we breathe in oxygen, we exhale carbon dioxide. It is so essential that we are going to essentially unanimously agree that yes, we need this. We need to have this oxygen. And now for a crowd of Americans, depending on, you know, which Americans that you're going to see, you will likely, I believe, find that if you ask them, is freedom a basic necessity or something that we need to have, that is it a mandatory concept that must be exercised in our, you know, conduction, they will tell you, yes, we must have freedom. Everybody needs freedom because it's around us in what we do and how we think, despite it being a concept that we've had to create for the long run.
Right. That's another thing too. Another interesting thing that I see is on some of the signs, they say that COVID-19 is a lie. I would really like to have a discussion with someone who thinks that COVID-19 is a lie, because I really don't know how, like, I really can't think of any support that they can come up with to show, to prove that COVID-19 is a lie. If it was only like one country or two countries or maximum of 10 countries dealing with it, okay, more understandable. But it's literally the whole world. I think, I don't know about how many countries, but pretty much the whole world is dealing with it.
Yeah, and if you have people literally losing their lives over a lie, then we humans are not, you know, prioritizing what we need to be thinking about, if that's what we're thinking right now, because that is absurd. As far as judging an argument fairly is concerned, even though communication studies will tell you that you need to look at arguments and points of view without judgment and without, you know, with an open mind, having a disease of this caliber, having a vice grip on the world that we're in currently, and having people who have died from it, trying to appropriate it as a lie, as in take this whole virus and try to cram it in a very tiny jar labeled lie. No, that's massively inappropriate.
Right. It's just very, in a sense, very disrespectful for all the nurses.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All the nurses that are working, because a lot of them have been spending at least a month away from their families. Like, I mean, you see their video all over. Mm-hmm. And like, I know in Iran, in our country, they did an interview with a couple that were both nurse, and they hadn't seen their children for 35 days.
Yeah.
So for me as a person, if I go out unnecessarily, I would feel responsible for not only I feel responsible for every day that they have to stay away from their children, but I would also feel responsible for all the death that's happening. But yeah, at the same time, you can't argue with what I just said, because like a country like Iran, people, like, it's not like here that the government helps you. So if you don't literally a lot of families, if they don't work today, they won't have anything to eat. So that I can understand.
Even though we have like social like programs to help provide, you know, services for certain demographics of our country, one of the fundamental things about the United States is having, well, mainly anywhere really, but like at least for this conversation, having someone be employed to earn, you know, monetary value in order to get the goods that are needed to sustain our survival, for sure. And when you were bringing up how, you know, nurses are, you know, in clinics and hospitals and all those sorts of buildings and workspaces that they have to be in for over 35 plus days and away from their families because they are essential services, which of course is true, I'm experiencing that kind of thing personally, because even though I'm going to cite my father for this, even though he's not a nurse, he is a United Parcel Service driver. So he has to deliver goods that people are asking for, certainly. And in a pandemic, when you're at home and you have to, and you pretty much have to order online for certain things that you can't get out in public as much, that job right there is very, very essential, especially for the economy that we have. And, you know, it's been literally weeks since he's been in the house. He's living in a separate living space right now because he's the only person who has to essentially go out on a mandatory basis. So even though I've seen him and I've spoken to him at a distance, of course, it's very different than, you know, having someone live within the same space as you. And even though you don't consider it being a very, you know, provocative, you know, set of affairs like that, it slowly builds up over time where it's like, oh, wow, I essentially don't get to see my father as much as I used to out of this house yet. But I can feel this sort of distancing. Like, the social distancing has evolved into just distancing, period. The same distance that you know, young adults get when they move out on their own, you know, in terms of our society and how it works in this nation of ours.
Right, yeah, that's something else that I feel like the postal service workers are up there with the nurses working right now, because as you said, pretty much almost everything you were going to purchase online, which I don't know, it's both good and bad, but yeah, that's very true. It was interesting. We mentioned the talk of freedom, and I just remembered that back when I was still working, one time on my break, I was just sitting down and this guy, I was sitting next to him. And then we started talking and stuff, and he said one thing to me that I'll never forget. He said that people in the United States have almost too much freedom. And coming to that, we don't have that. I really agree with that statement. Because here, you can pretty much disagree with anything, no matter what position you are or what position they are. Like, finding out, seeing the cases every day, every election. Can you hear me?
Yeah, the audio is like chopping up now, but that came clear. Yeah.
Okay. Ever since that time, the president says something, and everybody else is mocking him. And so, I think almost in no other country you're able to do that. You're able to have that much freedom, and that much freedom, I think, equals to a huge amount of power that people have. And I keep going back to the protest. This is an example of how much power the people have, especially in big states like California. We had, I don't know, they protested maybe a week, and then our governor opened up the all of the beaches. So it goes to show how much power the people have, don't you think?
Yeah, when we have a collective amount of citizens in our, whether it be in the state or in the nation in general, that will, you know, cause a big enough fuss or, you know, shake the foundation of what we are asking for, or what they are asking for, more like. When we have all that stirring, mm-hmm. you know, just brewing and just building up, and with the power that we have to use our voices, or they use their voices in that regard, it indeed does have, there is some sort of connection between, you know, our authority figures and the citizens in terms of positions of power. But that, with that being said, even though they are two distinctively different portions of power, there's a lot of power in each of them respectively.
That's true, yeah. I agree with that statement. But let's leave this section a little bit. What have you done in this in quarantine, other than schoolwork?
All right. Well, okay. Dismissing college work, because that is, you know, that's its own thing.
yeah.
I mainly listen to the music that I'm very fond of a lot. And if it's not that, I'm usually playing a video game. But like consistently throughout the day, the thing that I do the most is listen to music and also drink coffee, because coffee is one of my favorite beverages. But really, the main course is music. Very, very fulfilling.
That's very good. What type of music do you listen to most?
Well, I've been told that I'm an old soul when it comes to music, and that's very much true, because I prominently listen to music from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, that's...
And with that being said, it's very much Beatles is my favorite band ever. But then, you know, you have other artists from the time period and, like, around that, like John McLean, John Denver, Boney mm-hmm. M., Michael Jackson, although he's 80s, but still. Elvis Presley, very, very talented. There's a lot of talent in that whole era because of the amount of just breakthroughs there were.
Right. This is a great topic to talk about, too. Before I get into this, have you read any books or watched any movies? I know you said you're not much of a movie guy, but how about books? Have you read any good books that you want to recommend?
Books. When it comes to books, I very much favor philosophical texts.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most influential pieces of literature I ever read in my entire like lifespan, literally, mm-hmm. It was a text by Plato, and it was The Cave.
I've heard of it. I haven't read it, but I have heard of it.
Yeah, I read it in my introductory philosophy course that I took over a year ago as of this recording. And it was essentially about how people, kind of like what we were talking about in our previous topic, but people in the cave see the shadows on the wall because there's a fire behind them. And, you know, they only know the shadows because they are in shackles upon the cave wall. So all they see is their shadows, and they are able to make their own observations about what they are and what life is, essentially, because mm-hmm. it's an allegorical situation. And then when an individual comes into the cave and lets the light shine in and frees them of their shackles, the people within the shackles don't actually move. Instead, they're just fixated on the shadows because that's what they know best. And when they're brought outside into the sunlight in the natural world, where, you know, their knowledge is completely different and everything that they once knew is completely different from what they've previously known all their lives, it's a very, you know, shocking experience. And it's just it's an experience for them. And what's drawn from it is, once you leave the cave, you can't necessarily go back inside and look at those shadows the same way again.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Basically, the thing, yeah. very provocative story, but very, very essential philosophical text at that. I enjoyed it.
But when you mentioned that some people just, they were fixated on shadows and they couldn't think of anything else, they couldn't change their mindset, it made me think of how certain type of, well, I think you can call them certain type of people, but certain type of personalities leave on, and they just change shape. It's the same personality, but shows itself in different shapes. For example, I don't know if you read any of the two following book, Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, or Animal Farm by George Orwell.
I have not read those, but I've heard lots of information on Animal Farm, so I can recall most of the premise, and I can understand the way, the directions that it takes.
So, in both those books, you have multiple characters, but you have, especially Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, it's a huge book, and you have a whole lot of characters. So it's a little hard to get over, but in both those books, you have this character that personality traits. When you look at history in a broader sense, you see that, okay, they're the same. They have been in Dostoevsky's time. They have been in George Orwell's time. They're certainly in our time, and they will most likely be after us. And so that's a really interesting thing. That makes you question, so are we really changing, or are we just doing the same thing just in different ways?
Yeah, whether or not history repeats itself in different forms, or whether we're just one consistent batch of humanity, indeed. We're basically all one, just in different, slightly different variations, ever changing ever so slightly, intricate.
Right. With that being said, you still have characters that are very unique, especially in Crime and Punishment. This is one of my favorite books of all time, especially the main character in Crime and Punishment. I forgot his name. He's one of the unique characters that actually is brave enough to have an idea and then test out his idea. And then... accept the responsibility of what he does. And yeah, it's a very interesting book. I won't spoil it, but you guys go ahead. If you guys are interested, look it up and read it. It's a long book. It's about 500 pages, I think. 500 or 600, but it's very good. So let's move on to music you mentioned. I also mostly listen to 60s, 70s, pretty much the old stuff. And I always, it's a question that I always have, that what juice, what did they have that makes their work unique? For example, what did Led Zeppelin have that still after 50 years they influence people? And today you have artists that they're known for a year or two and then nobody knows them after that.
I think with mostly like our old bands, you know, you have your Led Zeppelins and Beatles and all of those, like you have the bands. They had a lot of room to experiment with music as an art form, essentially, because prior to the successes of them, you had some really, really popular artists. Like I said, Elvis was basically an influence on the Beatles, and you know, Elvis is an influential musical figure in general. Same thing with Little Richard and I'm trying to remember the artist who wrote Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry.
You have like the great granddads who basically ran popular music in the decades that they were really popular. And then you have the ones who came after them who could essentially walk it or then run a greater distance than they, because they had much more opportunities to experiment with both, you know, their popularity that they've established and with the access to the tools that they had to experiment with. I think there's just a lot. When you have a lot of space to be creative, there's going to be a lot of influential and long-lasting ideas if it's all done right.
I totally agree with what you mentioned, but I think we could make the argument that, okay, Beatles, Elvis Presley, all those people were 50, 30 years ago. Yes. From that time to now, technology has evolved so much that you would assume right now the musicians have more room to work. Yet you do not see that special talent. You do see it. Maybe I shouldn't say you do not see it. You do see it.
Talent in different manifestations with our modern music, for sure. I understand that. And there are some modern musics that I enjoy, but they are different. I'll let you continue.
Yeah, we have many good talents today, but even those, it's because I feel like one of the main things with them is their role model. Their role model, where are those singers that we listen to? Like, for example, I'm not sure how accurate this is or how correct my memory is helping me out here, but I think I read once that Adele's one of Adele's role model is I forgot her name. The singer who sang A Strange Fruit. Nina, I forgot her last name. Nina Simone, I think, or Nina Simon, one of the two. I forgot her last name. But
Nina Simone, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's right, yes.
And so that was one of her role models, and she's obviously a great singer. But at the same time, you have people like Adele. I can't recall so many. I don't listen to that much of new music, but you have great talents like her. You have at the same time many of the, you could say most of them, the new music is usually not that long lasting, if it makes sense. Like, an example of it would be again Led Zeppelin. After 50 years, they influenced a band called Greta Van Fleet, who sounds just like them. And they're really talented people. But at the same time, you have singers today that, I don't know, they just don't seem to be valuing the art they're doing, if that makes sense.
So yeah, the quintessential of the Beatles consistently just right, being go ahead John, again. Paul, George, and Ringo. So those are like the main four for that. There's stipulation as to like a quote unquote mm-hmm. fifth Beatle, you know, usually either being their main producer, George Martin, and all that, but that's another, you know, subject.
Right. At the same, see, I think there's so many other bands that are very underrated, while they shouldn't be, compared to Beatles. And examples of that would be, for example, I'm not just mentioning them because they're my favorite, one of my favorites, but also because, like, I have reasons to back them up. One of them, Pink Floyd.
I think,
especially after David Gilmour joined them. I think, yeah, because everybody that I ask, okay, you like Pink Floyd? They go like, yeah, we like the original. While the original content, yes, it was good. It was something new, perhaps. But when you mentioned that they didn't have contain the songs should contain a message. That was only after David joined.
There's a certain point in time where, like, so what you're saying is there was like a certain point in which Pink Floyd was like, you know, it had its like identity in one way, but then when it had the addition of a certain member, it really took off in a different direction and for the better. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I've heard that phenomena. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So up to the point where when Sid was with them, yeah, they were a good band. They were, I can't say they were a great band. They were all right. But when Sid had to get kicked out or be gone for whatever reason, because it's a whole story, and David had to replace him, that's when they really, it burst out. And it would make sense to me because Sid was, in a sense, you can say Sid Barrett was David Gilmour's student. Because they were, and I'm sure you know this, but I'm just saying for our listeners, Sid Barrett and David Gilmour were not classmates, but they went to the same school. And they were friends. And during lunches, David Gilmour would teach Sid how to play the guitar. And then so it would just, it would only make sense that once the master joins the group is going to be much better. Yet, most people that I have encountered who like Pink Floyd, they say, no, we like the original. And that's something that I do not understand. I don't understand why. But that's one band. Another person that I think is really underrated.
Yeah, I think he's brilliant.
Excuse me. Eric Clapton. He's underrated. Yeah, he's very underrated, I think. The Doors, one could argue that are underrated, because despite all the fact that I forgot his name, who was the lead singer, Jim Morrison, right? That was him, right?
Yeah, Jim
Morrison. I think it was Jim.
Yeah.
Hold on. Yeah. Despite all the bravey weird stuff he did on stage, he was actually very philosophical, one could say, and most of their music is still applicable to today's society, if that makes sense. And this is just a matter of opinion and taste, I think. But I think, for example, if you have listened to High Hopes by
probably
Pink
been
Floyd,
ever since I have, because I don't
have you listened
Pink
to that
Floyd
song or not
too much, but I know I listened to Wish You Were Here the most out of all their content,
right?
Which is probably like a cliche pick. Yeah, it's probably a cliche pick, but it's very emotional to me, so I see the value.
Of
in that,
course,
but yeah, so High Hope,
yeah. Yes. Yeah. So High Hope has a lyric that I think stays on forever. That the very beginning, when Gilmour says, the grass was greener, that's a nostalgia that I think lives on forever. And it's not only that one song, Wish You Were Here is the same thing. Comfortably Numb is the same thing. Another Brick in the Wall, both parts are the same thing. Money is the same thing. And so that's why I think, even though Pink Floyd did not have nearly as much as material as the Beatles or Rolling Stones, they should be
I would agree.
Not praised, but they should be rated among them, if that makes sense.
And of course, it goes without saying, just because you have a lot of tools in your tool shed, it doesn't mean that you're going to automatically create just groundbreaking content, because you have to utilize what you have in an applicable way, and in a way that reaches the audience in a profound and long-lasting manner that sustains relevancy for generations to come when it comes to
right. And if you want to go a little more back and just go by singers,
I
think even John Lennon alone, he was on the radio. Careers,
I don't even think John was necessarily the best hearsay, in my opinion alone. But when John had a solo hit, he really, really had a hit. So Imagine is no exception. Like, just I could literally just point you right to Imagine, and that's point proven right there.
Mm-hmm. Right, and if you want to go a little more back on who so were their
Little Richard,
the Everly influencers,
Brothers, which I love. Yeah, the Everly
Chuck
Brothers
Berry is rated okay,
but a ton of others.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
but
Buddy Holly.
Right, there are many others. There's Muddy Waters. You can't. I think he was under. Yeah, he was underrated. And one of my favorites, B.B. King. He was underrated. Very much so, I think.
To be honest, but. I mean, I think if I were to investigate,
have you heard of him or no?
Influence era, then I think I'd come across him eventually, and then I would probably find some joy in his content. As someone new,
right? So you should definitely check him out, and I think our listeners should too. So he comes from a slavery background. And so he was risen up during the slavery times in United States, and he was a cotton picker, which in my opinion helped him a lot with playing the guitar, because he just plays so smooth that he really is a king, I would say. And so He's one of the ones that's underrated. And Eric Clapton played with him a lot. Yeah, and I think they have one or two albums together. And they produced great material. His B.B. King's most famous song is "The Thrill Is Gone." And there's Eric different Clapton versions of it, but the version with Eric Clapton, that's a nice one. I think you'll like it.
Element to whatever he seems to touch, I'll say. And I've seen it too, because what's
right,
coincidental you bring up Eric Clapton? He and George Harrison were best friends, literally, and so much so that. Yeah, that literally what George's first wife actually, when she left George and they split, she went to Eric, but George didn't hold a grudge against Eric at all, for that matter. And Eric and George have done plenty of collaborations together, so when you think of them, I see Eric's talent from that too.
Well, that's the story I've heard, is that Eric actually wrote Layla
Patty Boyd, I think, was the wife.
Harrison's wife. While they were... Huh? I think so, yeah. And, yeah, that's an interesting point. And this has been... they hadn't split up. This is when they were together. Harrison and his wife were together. So it's interesting
tweet. But that's why I think a class in has more bluesy tone than most of the people in his era. Well,
yes.
Yeah, like Jimmy Page has that too. Yeah. And so I think he's gonna make him so great.
But nonetheless, I would say yes, the Beatles are one of the greatest bands. But maybe reconsider them in rating. Not saying, Ian, this is not to say that they're not a good band. No, they're one of the greatest bands, and we're probably not going to ever have another Beatles. But
I will say, despite them being very influential and despite them making many a hit, even as a diehard fan myself, I will say that there are times in which you it should be like noted to like maybe like tone it down a notch or two here and there, because sometimes you just get tired of hearing the same thing over and over. Sometimes you don't, but then some people might not have the same exact likeness for the, you know, the source as you, and that's perfectly normal.
Yeah, that's make the painting shine. Yeah, but that's quite interesting. Yeah, and for
yes, he did.
John Lennon, he had a tragic life, you could say. It's interesting because one of the conspiracy theories I came upon with was they said that one of Yoko's songs, if you play it backwards, it says I shot John Lennon, and they said, oh yes, it's Yoko shot John Lennon, which was a really interesting thing for me to research upon, but I didn't come up with. I couldn't find any reliable answer.
In the whole playing audio backwards to reveal a hidden message in songs, the Stairway to Heaven one being like the most infamous of which. But
yeah,
you know when you and I haven't even heard of that one, about yeah, that one, and I have not actually heard that before.
I had a psych teacher who back in high school who was a fan of the Beatles, okay. And he was teaching us about subliminal messages, and that was one of the examples he used. Yeah, and so he used that one. He used Stairway to Heaven. I think he even used Money by Pink Floyd. I forgot what they pronounced, but they had something too, which was crazy. Because I don't know, it was just crazy. But yeah, that's very interesting.
Trying to like,
do you have anything else to add?
That the bringing up John's life being tragic, it indeed was though. Like I will like just be brief on it. Add to the best of my ability since I have knowledge of it. I do realize that when John was, you know, young, his biological father was absent from his life, and tragically his mother was in a automobile accident that took her life at a young age. So having like been devoid of, you know, your biological parents, but still being able to go on to be part of the most successful songwriting partnership in that the world has ever seen. And even, you know, using those tragic times to even bring, you know, pieces to the table, such as Julia on the White Album. It's about his mother. It's very, very just, it's almost bold to just be able to seemingly with what talent that you have and what you've grown up with, facilitating both those things at once into a passion that you're so intricately woven. Yeah.
Right, maybe that's why me personally admire John Lennon more, because of his life and the stuff he went through. But yeah, nonetheless, it was a great partnership. I just remembered that I said I would mention why you should value the music you listen to, the books you read, and the movies. Because those countries that Austria, Germany, Finland, all those European countries, they have some. Finland is the happiest country for, I think, 2 or 3 years in a row. Yeah. And so I'm interested to know, okay, what makes that population happy? And so one of the things I came upon with is their reading habits. So all those countries have some of the highest reading times. And they have this, I think it was Finland, that they have this tradition that, let's say I'm in a subway and I just finished the book, they leave it on the subway seat so somebody else could take it and read it. And I think that's just such a great tradition, because the way I look at it is, if you have enough knowledge, if you gain knowledge through these ways, then when, God forbids, the next pandemic comes out, we're going to have a different result than what we have now.
I do agree. The thing is with books too.
Don't you think?
Sorry about that. Go ahead. Well, yeah, the thing is with books too, so you have to really put a certain level of investment into really acquiring the most material you can get from the medium itself, because of how personally involved in just enriching a book can really be. And I will stand by that, because there's almost a certain just methodical manner of having to just really get into a book. And when you're, really in the thick of it, you can really extract all the happiness you can potentially get from it. I will put that out there.
Right. And I think when we talk about this stuff, most people think, oh no, I have to spend an hour or 2 hours reading one book. Well, it's not necessarily like that. You can spend 30 minutes, 15 minutes even, reading a book. And the only thing that matters is be picky about these three things, the movies, the books, and the music you listen to. If you're picky about this stuff and sort of have a filter for them, your outcome is going to be much, much great.
Yeah.
At the meantime, I think we have to accept that not everybody is going to be like this. And that's the beauty of the world, to have these paradoxes. But
indeed,
I think it's just
control and the interests you have is quintessential to bringing out the best in them. And of course, there are some people who will put their sense of quality control to the highest standard that they can, and they will heavily consider it and care about it. And there are some people who pretty much will have an anything goes philosophy. And the beauty of that is you'll see some people who can approach the same types of mediums differently, but in the end, as long as they find some sort of happiness in their pursuits, then I would take it that things work out just fine.
Right. Yeah. So it's, I don't know, it's just something to think of in the future and maybe change it's one of the bad behaviors that we have. Maybe we can change that. I personally have tried to change it.
I've worked on.
I don't know how successful I am at it, but I have tried to change it.
You want to treat yourself to the best of the best, but in order for you to really get the most out of finding and acquiring the best of the best, you have to have a sense of priority and really being committed to it.
Right, yeah. And since you mentioned that, it's not like from the very beginning you're listening, you're reading, I don't know, some really big and hard authors, like Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Plato, all those people. But you can start slowly by reading smaller books, easier books, and then work your way up.
It's essentially, like, to those seems irrelevant at which speed you will reach the destination or which road you take to get there, because any way you approach trying to feel as enriched as possible, as long as you get there and you're able to fully take in the experience that you're after, I think that makes the journey itself, while it is very fulfilling in its own right, it will, you know, serve as a means to the destination that is more omnipotent, important in the end.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I think we've covered everything pretty much. Fantastic. It was a nice conversation. Do you have anything else to add?
This was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, no problem. It was great talking to you, and I hope that our listeners enjoy, and we can have you for more episodes on the show.
And if you wanted me back, I would gladly consider it and likely accept it. Yes. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Yep.